listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the show today. And today I'm going to piss some people off, and that's okay. I hardly ever, never in fact, talk about politics, and I'm not really going to start today in terms of telling anybody how to think. Besides that, I live in Canada. And so, but what I am is observing some things. And it doesn't just apply to the U.S. It applies to Canada as well here and some other countries. And I'm not a student of every situation in all the different countries. But here's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a volatile, angry, vitriolic world. I think it sucks. I don't know about you, but I realize news programs, they're built to sensationalize. And I don't care which side you're on. They're built to dwell on the negative and get cycles of negativity going and get you all stirred up so you shake your fist and go vote a certain way or write a letter or do whatever. But I'm talking about not the news, which is designed to sell, you know, get viewers to sell news. My wife and I were in Phoenix a little while ago, and my wife expressed just an opinion about something, and she's not very loud spoken about something. She just said something, and someone just completely flipped out on her and said, "How dare you think this, that, and the other?" And I'm being specifically vague because it happens in every situation, and I don't care if you're in the U.S., it's Republican or Democrat, and here up here it's conservative or liberal, and then they've got more than two parties up here, three main ones, New Democrats, liberal, and conservative. That's not a problem. It's not the point. But at least as I watch the U.S., and my wife and I are both dual nationals, so we participate in both countries as citizens, and I'm really frustrated. And the reason is because nobody is taking any responsibility. I take responsibility for me. Everything I say or do or feel, my feelings, I'm responsible for. And what I've noticed in my quest to live the ultimate life is that the more responsibility I take for that, and the more intentional I am about my focus and clarity, the better outcomes I get. The more success I have, the more money I make, the more people I get to help and work along the way. Because ultimate life is a process of working with love and service. And I'm not seeing any of that crap in the public discourse right now. Very, very little. So the U.S., you recently had a big, long government, partial government shutdown where some people weren't getting paid, and it caused all kinds of problems. And it would be interesting to watch that from a foreign country, except my wife, a week and a half ago, last Sunday, today's Tuesday, so 9 days ago, right in the middle of that shutdown, whatever it is, which is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But in the middle of that, she needed to go to Las Vegas for a week to go to Author Nation, which was a big conference of authors. And she owns a publishing company, and you know that. We've talked about it before. So we were talking about going, you know, she needed to go, and she'd been planning on going for many months, and she was excited and going to learn all kinds of stuff for our publishing business and blah, 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 blah. And then the conversation got to, gee, I wonder if you're going to be able to get there. Gee, I wonder if you're going to be able to come home. So, you know, long line. She went in the line here, and the TSA here in Edmonton has customs here. Now, some places you clear customs when you land in that country, and some places you pre-clear in the airport where you take off. Now, in Calgary and Edmonton here in Alberta, they have U.S. pre-clearance things. So you do that customs stuff here, and then when you land in wherever your U.S. destination is, you don't go through customs. You land with the domestic flights. Anyway, hours-long lines, missing people, da-da-da-da, you know, and it just drove her to think, you know, how grateful she was. And so she thanked the people there for essentially working without pay, I guess, and deciding to do their jobs. And then when the conference was over 8 days later, we weren't sure if she was going to get back that day or some other day, or, you know, 1,000, 1,500 flights, 2,000 flights a day canceled. How embarrassing. Like, how stupid are we to live in a place where we do that? And I don't care which side of the fence you're on. The idea that that kind of public stupidity is what we need to do to try to get our way, I find that an embarrassment. So as a U.S. citizen, I was embarrassed in front of the world that we can't get our governance crap together enough to, you know, have the government run normally, and at a moment's notice, one party or the other can cause such disruption. And I found that to be stupid, in the antithesis of living a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. So I thought to myself, as I went on, as you know, this was going on, and things turned out well. Her flight was really early out of Phoenix to Denver, and she had a really tight connection in Denver, only 45 minutes. She made it, the flights were on time, and she landed here in Edmonton. Cheers to the traffic controllers and TSA people that were working and allowed her to get here. So I was really grateful for them and grateful that she made it. But it's caused me some real reflection. And so what I wanted to talk about today is it's on us, like you and me. It is on us to reclaim humanity in this divided world. It isn't on them. The people in Congress and the Senate and governor's mansions and why, it's not on them. They are doing it, so the world is falling apart. Bullshit. So here's the question. What I ask myself, and I'm not going to ask you, because what I'm not trying to do is get you all up in arms and angry and say I'm full of crap. What I ask myself is my attitude tolerant? Can I allow others to have a different viewpoint? I saw a piece of a news clip the other day where one person, a woman who was a podcaster, I think, announced that she was severing ties with an entire branch of her family because they voted for the other guy or the other gal. And I thought, how stupid. What if we do that for sports teams? I mean, we just had the World Series, and the Dodgers played Toronto Blue Jays. And man, I was rooting for the Jays, even though I was born in California. The Dodgers won last year, and it went to 7 games and everything. What would happen if we decided we were going to go to war over the outcome of this World Series? Or have violence, or yell, or throw bottles, or break people's windows, or, like, have we lost our flipping minds? Like, you, so my question to me is, how do I view people who have a different opinion? And it isn't just about politics, and it isn't just about healthcare premiums or immigration or whatever the thing is. It's about everything. Who am I when it comes to allowing you, or you allowing me, to have a different opinion? What about religion? Now, I don't know. I'm sure it goes on in many countries. There's been a lot of noise recently about some persecution. The Middle East, with Israel and the neighboring countries, has been a hotbed forever. And there was a news report I saw, 6 or 7 news reports, about some persecution in one of the African countries. Like, what is it about us that we're believing that if you don't believe like I do, I'm going to kill you, or you're going to kill me? What has happened to our minds that we've decided that that's a good way to solve a problem, instead of simply allowing a difference? What if we each claim the privilege of worshiping God according to how I feel like it? And I can worship how, where, or what I want to, and so can you. And as long as we don't try to force each other to, you know, I'm not going to make you, and you're not going to make me do ours, and, you know, we don't pretend our religious observance demands that we're cruel to others and so forth. Like, why can't we allow that? We used to do that. We used to do that really well, or at least a lot better than now. Now, I understand, particularly with religion and politics, there's been those battles forever. right? There's been, for a long time, there was a division about Catholics and Protestants in Ireland and probably other places. And there's many countries where that happens. Like, what is wrong with us? So I'm going to tell you what I think it is and what we could do about it. Now, I'm not telling you what you should do because it's not my place to do it. But what I am going to share with you is what I do and what I see. The level of divisiveness or divisiveness, I'm not sure how you say that word, in the world right now breaks my heart. So when I see that violence and anger and not people protesting, people can express their opinions, but throwing things and trying to hurt others. And, you know, I saw a news report of a big fight in the streets and blood was all over the place. Like, what is that about? So the level of divisiveness, it doesn't make me angry. I don't get mad at one side or the other, but it does break my heart. Because here's what I know. I know that in that kind of exchange, nobody wins. You know, somebody may win the fight. Somebody may injure or kill the other person. Somebody may or may not get arrested and get charged with whatever. But nobody caused any good to happen. Nobody changed anybody's mind. Nobody came to a greater understanding of each other's point of view. None of that happened. And until that happens, we're not going to solve any of this. And in fact, I don't know. I'm not doing a scientific study, but it feels to me like it's getting worse and worse. More violence, more anger, more level of vitriol. And leaders that are supposed to be mellower and have brains enough to lead well are leading the charge of vitriol and anger. The level of insults and name-calling that gets done on TV and from the pulpit in ruling institutions is embarrassing. So I vented for a moment. And so what I want to talk about really today isn't just to point out the problem and say, crap, we have a giant problem, because we do. What I want to talk about is, isn't it time? Haven't we had enough? Isn't it time to reclaim our humanity? And humanity doesn't mean I'm right and you're wrong. Humanity doesn't mean you're going to make me or somebody else do what you want. That isn't humanity. Humanity is love. Humanity is working together. Humanity is figuring out how we create the best compromise that we can. If I take the view that if you believe or think or act a certain way, that there's something wrong with you, we're never going to solve that problem. If I get to a place where I say, well, you have a different opinion, and I ask a lot of questions, and then I understand your opinion, and then I say, well, I respectfully disagree, I think we should handle it this way, we can have that conversation. You can come to understand what I think, and I can come to understand what you think. And I know that in that process, each of us changes a little, because I see, and so do you, you know, this name-calling and arguments go on, and people just spouting crap that's not true. I saw, I think it was, and again, I'm not picking sides here. I saw someone in the United States Congress was calling someone else names, called them names, and said they weren't qualified to do anything. And then the person running the news, particular newscaster, and I watch different news channels, I'm not stuck on one, gave a list of that particular individual's accomplishments, their degrees and their awards. And so the idea that they were incompetent or unqualified is absurd on its face. Yet the person speaking the vitriol yelled it and pronounced it as if it were gospel truth, like the sun shining in the sky. Well, how the heck are we ever going to get to a mutually beneficial solution in that? We're not. Because the path that we're going down with hate and anger, it leads to more hate and anger, leads to violence, leads to war eventually. Right? Is that who we really want to be? I can't imagine that. So here's the things that I notice. I notice that the level of division in the world breaks my heart. Okay, here's another thing I know for sure. We cannot create an ultimate life if we deny others worth. Now, there's been several episodes where I talk about the acronym WIPOS, W-I-P-O-S, worth, identity, possibility, ownership, and sovereignty. So if I claim infinite worth, I have to allow you infinite worth. And in fact, I have to believe with all my heart that you're worth exactly as much as I am. The identity piece, if I claim to be an offspring of the divine, a creation out of love and so forth, then that absolutely requires that I accord you the same exalted status. You're a child of the divine. If I say I have gifts and talents, then you have them, as many or more than I do. If I have desires to add good to the world, then I have to assign, accept, and believe that you have that. If I say P, possibility, well, I can create whatever I want, and then you can too. And on top of that, I feel it's my responsibility to do what I can to support you, to encourage you, to love you. We're not going to build unity on hate. It's never going to happen. And everybody's saying everybody else is the hater. I'm not seeing it. None of the vitriol I'm seeing spewed says love. It says hate, judgment, division, anger, frustration. That doesn't create your ultimate life. And I've spent like who knows how many episodes, hundreds now, talking about how to create, what to do, how to create your perfect day, how to create your wealth and income and impact. We've talked a lot about that. And today what I'm talking about is the knots. Like, we got to end this hate and vitriol. And I'm first. I end it. I choose. I do not speak that. I choose not to think it. And I'm inviting you to join with me. I'm inviting you to think that person who voted differently than me, or who goes to a different church, or believes a different thing, they're just as good, just as worthy, just as intelligent, and just as capable as I am. That would be an interesting conversation. When people are busy spouting vitriol, to sit them down and say, do you believe that person over there is worth the same that you are? I don't really know what the answer would be, but based on what I'm hearing, unless some radical change takes place, the answer is going to be a furious and fierce no. You know, they're subhuman, they're whatever, right? Do you believe they're as intelligent as you are? Frickin' absolutely not, because if they had any brains at all, you know, fill in the blank. And what I'm telling you right now is if you and I talk to each other that way, we're never going to build together. We're never going to create possibility. We're never going to have peace and joy. We're going to have divisiveness, anger, bitterness, violence, stealing, hurting, burning, rioting, because I or you, we believe the other person is worthless, subhuman. We've somehow assigned the idea that because we're different, we're better. And that's flat not true. It is not true. So if you think any of that, there's a rethink. There's a rethink. Unless you love this anger and fury. If you love living in that anger and fury, then you're right in your element right now. So here's the acronym, and I gave it to you before. Let's start with WIPOS, worth, identity, possibility, ownership, sovereignty. Why wouldn't we believe? Why isn't someone who believes different, that goes to a different church, or thinks we ought to handle one of the big issues right now seems to be how you pay for healthcare. Somebody can think we ought to handle that different, and why does that make them subhuman? Well, it doesn't. So we have to get back to acknowledging equal worth. You're worth the same thing as me. And whether you're religious or not, I don't care. Spirituality is built into us. We all know, without question, there's something greater than ourselves. We've invented a bunch of names, so we don't have to use the word God and spirit and those kind of things because they're stuck to religion, and we may have a particular bugaboo about that. Whatever. You know that there's something outside yourself. And if you don't, that is a narrow and sad existence. And I'm not telling you you can't feel like that, and I'm certainly absolutely willing to allow you to live like that. I have both lived and like that and known many who do, and I never found that to be very rewarding. In fact, the opposite. I found it to be empty and sad. So identity is as a divine being. Possibility means you and I, we can create whatever we can dream. And here's where I see a big struggle. One point of view is, yeah, I have all this possibility, and it's your obligation to get all my barriers out of the way so I can do whatever I want with ease. I got news for you. Nobody owes me anything. And nobody owes you anything. And the idea that somebody owes me the ultimate life, or owes me removing my barriers, is a bunch of crap. We are able to create whatever we want, but nobody owes me a certain thing. And what I see a lot of, this sort of feeling, and I think it comes partly from, you know, the invention of the internet and now AI. We've gotten to the place where we think everything needs to be fast, a download and double click world. Everything that's a problem needs to be solvable in the length of a TV sitcom, which keeps getting shorter, right? A 30-minute sitcom used to be 26 minutes or 27. It was commercials at the front and in the middle and the back, and now there's 5 or 6 commercials, and I think it's down to about 22 minutes. So the length of a TV sitcom shrinking, but we have this idea that if it's not easy, somebody's doing something wrong. And it's out there. Somebody out there doing something wrong, right? And you owe me an easy path. Well, nothing in nature works that way. Trees grow slowly. You know, erosion takes place slowly. Mountains move slowly. Tectonic plates move glacially. And so nobody owes me anything. And that is a good thing, because that means my destiny's in my hands. I have the ability to create whatever I want, and so do you. Now, it's absolute truth, and I'm not going to remotely pretend that some people aren't born into circumstances that are much more difficult than others. Maybe you're born without an arm, or, you know, with some significant difficulties. I see those commercials on TV like you do that advertises, you know, St. Jude's and Shriners and these other medical institutions that are trying to take care of kids. And my heart aches for that. And then these philanthropic organizations that are trying to take care of kids in other countries that are born with, you know, cleft palates and other difficulties. We are born into whatever circumstance we are. And we are called to love and serve. I was really excited when I saw a news article the other day that Samaritan's Purse, which is a Christian philanthropic organization, had unloaded, you know, truckloads of supplies to some area that was struck with disaster. And I don't remember the area, and it doesn't matter. What I loved was the fact that somebody was there trying to help, and help in a giant way. I love the religious, a lot of churches, and a lot of nonprofits that do that. And I love that, and I love contributing and being part of that, whether it's physical labor or money. You know what else I know? I know that there are boatloads of organizations that are set up to be philanthropic that are stealing the money, that are lying through their teeth about what it's for and what they're doing with it and what percentage of it actually get used. Now, I don't know all the details, but it's pretty flippin' embarrassing that that concert was done in California and raised $100 million and not a single penny has gone to rebuild a house. You know, I didn't donate to that because it was under the control of people I don't trust. But the research, at least that I have read, and I've read it from multiple sources, is that the money got funneled off to different organizations, many of which had nothing to do with rebuilding that area. And that made me really sad because I got two friends that I personally know well that who lost their homes in that fire. And maybe you do too. You know, burned them down, lost everything. Not a cent. $100 million. $100 million isn't going to rebuild the whole area, but not a cent? How did all that money just disappear? How embarrassing are we in that? So the do-gooding, you know, that kind of attitude is taking advantage of your and my willingness to give. I'm going to just pretend I'm giving it and I'm going to steal it all. How sad. And again, isn't it time that we stand up and do something? Now, I'm not going to go chase down crooked organizations and try to expose them and bring them to account. I'm not going to do that. What I am going to do is my own language, my own attitude, my own being, my own service is going to be to the standard that I've been talking about. The standard of love, the standard of unity, the standard of acknowledging you as every bit as important and valuable as I am. Maybe you have more gifts, maybe you have more to add to the world. But none of that's going to happen very well if we're not helping, if we're not combined. And we seem to be allergic to that. We seem to have connected ourselves, bolted ourselves to the finger-pointing blame game. And if we say, well, I'll be good if they will, it doesn't work. You, me, we got to decide who we are in the world right now, every single day. And if you've had a habit, or I have had a habit, and I'm not talking to you and me, I got a mirror. If I have a habit of judging, of not listening, if I have a habit of name calling quietly or otherwise, if I have a habit of, well, they don't know what they're talking about. What I'm really saying is I'm choosing to believe I know more than you and I'm better than you and my way, this, that, and the other. And that's never true. In every circumstance, no matter what the disagreement has been, when I sit down with someone and we actually listen openly, not listen to defend, not listen to attack, not listen to justify, but we just listen to learn, I've never done that without coming away thinking, crap, I didn't know that. Wow, I didn't realize it was like that. I didn't understand this, that, and the other. And then the conversation about what to do next is completely different. Completely different. It never would have happened if I had stayed stuck in the viewpoints that I had. And that's happening a lot. The idea that, well, if you don't think like I do, there's something wrong with you because I'm more enlightened. That's just bullshit. Your opinion isn't any better than anyone else's. And when we, each of us, cling to the idea that we're right, all we do is guarantee that we stay divided. So the antidote to this is to acknowledge worth, identity, possibility, ownership, and sovereignty. Yes, of yourself, but of you. If I want to get along with you or a group that thinks, acts, or believes differently than me, then I need to decide. I need to decide about your worth being infinite, about your identity being just as good, just as divine as mine. Your possibility is great. Your ownership just as valid, and your sovereignty just as true. It's one thing to claim that for ourselves. It's an entirely another thing to say, you know what? I'm going to give that. I'm going to give that to each person. Your worth is infinite. Your identity is divine. Your possibility is just as important as mine. Ownership and sovereignty. So that is the place to start. There is no other place to start. From a place of love and acknowledging the other person. If the first thing I think about is me, who's going to acknowledge me, you're finished. It's like a marriage. You know, we're gonna each of us do 50-50. That's never gonna work. If you're gonna get married to somebody, it's 100-100. If it's gonna last. And if we're gonna heal this kind of division, whether it's in our family or in our neighborhoods and larger in states and provinces and nations, we have to, that word that Gandhi said, we have to be the change we want to see in the world. Now, that's hard. I want you to do it first. When you suck it up and be good, okay, then I will. Well, we have to be first. So I issue a challenge to you. The division is a disease. The prognosis of this is death, death of friendship, death of love, death of civility, death of society, death of countries, death, fear, rage, violence. It's all terrifying. And that's that is the outcome of the disease of division. And we can pretend it's not, but it is. And I'm not saying the disease of disagreement. Disagreement is natural. You ask five people about how to solve a problem, you probably get six different opinions. Fine. But that goes to division when we then make someone wrong for their opinion. So here are some of the symptoms of this, the disease of division. Outrage is currency. The more outrage I have or you have about something, the more I do that, I'm more powerful. So we elevate those with the greatest outrage. And I understand why news channels do that. I despise it. I think it's terrible because it tears down the fabric of hope. But I understand they do it to get ratings. And I wish that we were merchants of hope instead of merchants of despair. Algorithms in social media and news feeds, they reward anger. The more horrible the news clip, viewers need to be careful of this sensitive stuff. Some of these pictures are going to, may offend some people. And in the name of news, we show horrifying horror shows. I'm not pretending we hide those things and pretend they didn't happen. What I'm way more interested in is how am I behaving? What am I believing about others? And how am I showing up in the world to invite love, possibility, growth? What am I doing to allow others the same freedom of expression? And I don't mean freedom to beat the crap out of somebody. That's not freedom of expression. Freedom of expression is you want to paint the wall blue and I'll paint my wall green. You write a book that says this, I'll write a book that says that. You believe and you want to, worship or not worship a particular way and I want to another way. That's freedom of expression. But the moment I walk in your house or on your lawn or on your car or something, try to make you do what I want, that's not freedom of expression. And it never will be. And it will never produce any kind of harmony. And it sure as heck isn't going to fix our society. All that does is escalate. And all we have to do is look at the last 10 years, at least in the U.S., to see that. It's just horrific. And I'm from the U.S. I mean, right now I live in Canada, but wow. So, and somebody else isn't going to fix it. It's on you and me. Starts with us. So here's another truth. Violence and hate do not produce lasting freedom. Violence and hate only produce fear. Now, if that's the goal of some segment of this, anarchists and people, whatever, I'm not talking to you because you're getting exactly what you are trying to get. What I am doing is identifying the truth of what's going on, intentionally creating violence and hate. That is the road to anarchy. That is the road to destruction. That is the road to death. Again, death of civility, death of relationships, the death of kindness, the death of patience, the death of helping people, the death of our being truly human. We are built to love and serve. All we have to do is look at our neurotransmitters. When we help and love each other, we feel better than any other time. Some people say, well, of course, that was built in as a survival mechanism. Nonsense. That's divine design. So we are called to love and serve each other. That is our highest calling. And you know that because you've had times when you feel like that. So let's talk about this for a minute, each of these pillars. Worth, division begins when worth is denied. If I think you're not worth as much as me, or you think I'm not, you know, or we think somebody else is not, and we ignore people, because when people feel unseen, they scream louder. When people feel worthless, they get frustrated, you know, they yell, they attack. And so bequeathing worth, approaching every conversation. And again, you and I, we're not going to change, you know, Congress or the parliament or anything by ourselves. Where it starts is in our own conversation. So I ask myself this, and I challenge you. Do I begin every conversation acknowledging the worth, the infinite worth of the other person in my mind? Or do I look at them as an irritating jerk with a different opinion who I either have to ignore, yell at, or somehow fix? What I've done there is demean your worth. I'm not doing that. I won't, ever. And I'm inviting you to join me because we can't control someone else, but we can control our own thoughts and feelings and behaviors. So can you imagine my goal this year, and I've said this on many shows, my goal this year is to reach 300 million people with this WIPOS, worth, infinite worth, divine identity, infinite possibility, complete ownership and sovereignty, absolute sovereignty over your life. Like if we not only claimed that for ourselves, but bequeathed it fully and freely on others, 300 million people, we'd change the world. We'd be done. Wars would be over. The economy would be benevolent. And the untold trillions of dollars we spend on enforcement and policing and cybersecurity and everything, it'd all be unnecessary. All that trillions of dollars could be immediately turned and immediately solve the problems of hunger and clean water and literacy and education, all stuff. We could solve all that in a minute. But we have to spend an enormous part of our wealth because we are not acknowledging the other's worth. So the step to do that, see yourself and each other person as a loving creation of the divine, a child of God, if you will. And if God is not the word you use, then a creation of the universe. The old song in the 60s, Desiderata, you're a child of the universe. No less than the trees and the stars, you have a right to be here. Well, if I have a right to be here, then so do you. Just as much. So the practical exercise is every conversation you enter, especially if it's heated, affirm in your own mind that person has infinite worth. Worth is not earned. It's a given. The second thing is identity and possibility, and they're tied together because they're rooted in each other. If you know, if who we think we are determines our possibility. If I think I'm untalented and I can't do anything right, that's going to manifest. That's going to be how life is. I'll give you a really specific example. I've directed, I don't know, dozens, maybe hundreds of choirs. Often, very often, they're full of volunteer people, ragtag band of volunteers. And I say that to them. I can't really sing that well, and I sure as heck can't sing a part, and you know, all of that. And so that's where they start. Well, their identity is a divine being. They're a child of God, so that's their identity. And their possibility is therefore infinite because they've got DNA, divine DNA woven in them. And all I can listen in just a couple seconds, maybe 30 seconds, and I can tell if somebody's got a voice that can be brought to sing, carry a pitch and, you know, learn a part and stuff like that. And so changing the story, you say, well, I can't sing. I just say, okay, cool, let's just see. Like, I don't argue with them, let's just see. And I'll sing a pitch to them. And they'll sing a different one. And I'll say, all right, now go. Could you know how to make that pitch higher? Sure enough, they do. Do you know how to make that pitch lower? Sure enough, they do. And then I'll play a note on the piano. And they'll hear it. And I'll say, all right, now sing. and they'll sing whatever note. And I'll say, now try to move your voice up and down, that higher or lower we just did, until it's the same as this note on the piano. And they experiment for a while, but pretty soon, with some nudging and help, they can do it. And when they do, then their ear tells them, wow, they sound the same. That note on the piano and my voice, they're the same pitch. And they're not the same timbre, because voice doesn't sound like keys, piano strings, but they can tell. What happens is they didn't know they could tell. They didn't realize that was their possibility. So that's just a silly, you know, tiny example. But your possibility is infinite. I don't care if you haven't done anything with it. It still is. That's like saying an acorn on the shelf still can't grow to be an oak. The DNA and instructions are all in there. Your divine DNA is there. You have gifts and talents. Maybe you've never developed any of them. Maybe you're mad because you think somebody else got a better deal when the talents were handed out than you did. I have discovered it doesn't do any good. Be pointing fingers, yelling at society, the government, the weather, or God. I've never found a lot of results in that because nobody owes me anything. What I have found good results in is taking responsibility for my own life. I own this. I'm doing it. I don't know how, but I'm going to figure it out. So your divine identity drives infinite possibility. When you realize deep in your heart, wow, I am a child of the divine. I'm not an accident. I'm not a mistake. I don't care what anybody else said. I don't care what my mother or father or neighbors or whatever said. I don't care. Care if they were drunk or addicts. They called that. I don't care. What I know is that my identity is actually divine. My spirit, my creator. Wow. If that's true, then I have divine DNA. Ooh, how cool. Well, if I have divine DNA, then I can do anything. I got to learn, I got to work, I got to figure it out, but the potential, the possibility is there. The last piece is ownership and sovereignty together. And ownership is like blaming governments and blaming leaders and blaming others. When I see all this vindictive argument, that's just laziness. When you blame other people for your crap, that's just laziness. Intellectual laziness, spiritual laziness. It's convenient and it's easy, and it means I don't have to do anything. So I work with a Hollywood A-list vocal coach, and I have for many years, to sing and sing better. If I blame him for my lack of progress, I'm not going to get any better no matter what I do. If you work out in a gym, you blame your trainer all you want, but if you don't hit the floor and do the push-ups, or make the circuits on the machines, you're not gonna get anything. You can yell at them all you want, and you're full of crap, and you know it. But I see that, and so do you. We own our own behavior. We own our lives. We own the words that come out of our mouths. We own the battlefield behind us. Every reaction, every post, every vitriolic comeback, every sputum of vile language that someone puts out, me, you, or anybody else, we own that. Now, I don't care if we hide behind a fake account and people don't know who we are, we still own it. And I'll tell you why. The act of doing it stains my heart. I don't care what effect it has on them. The act of living in a place where I spew that vile stuff out changes me in a negative way. On the other hand, living in possibility and growth and love, that changes me too. So your invitation is right here. Imagine the most difficult circumstance. Somebody hits you and you get out and they're blaming you and they start yelling at you and calling you names and everything. You stupid idiot. Don't you know how to drive? You know, all that on and on and on, right? And instead of reacting or defending or doing anything, you simply respond with calm authority. Well, we'll sort out the responsibility later. Let's just exchange our information and go from there. And no matter what they say, calm authority. And by authority, I don't mean we get to tell them what to do because we don't. But the authority we have is over our emotions. And I'll tell you what you find really quickly is if you don't take the bait, you don't rise to the bitterness and the bashing, pretty soon a person yelling by themselves will stop. And they stop because they're not getting the intended result. They're not getting a rise out of you or me. They're not creating the chaos of negativity. So worth, identity, possibility, ownership, sovereignty. Own your behavior. Own your language. Own your thinking. Right? And then clean it up. Be the change and start today. So here's what I want to leave you with. Our collective healing from this divisiveness and vitriol, it starts with me and it starts with you. I can't control you or my neighbor or anybody else. What I can control is what I say and what I do. What I can control is I can choose to love you, even if you hate me. I can choose to allow you to believe anything you want, even if you don't give that to me. See, when I say, well, you hate me, so I'm going to hate you. You yelled at me, so I'm going to yell at you. What I've done is I've given you my power. Well, I'm not doing that. I own my feelings. I own my language. And I claim that ownership. I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it. I love you even if you hate everything I've said. I invite you to live in peace. I invite you to be a beacon of light, a vessel of love, and a conduit of power. The bitterness that we share, or that we speak, or that we act out, is like pouring acid on a flower. It dies. On the other hand, if we spread kindness and love, no matter what others do, then those seeds will also take root. And that doesn't mean the minute we do something good, the world's going to change and the clouds break and the sun shines out and bluebirds sing. We all know that doesn't happen. But what it does mean, and I can tell you this from personal experience, I go to bed with every single day in complete peace. I have said things that are true. I have said everything I say with kindness, not doormat, not giving my power away, but I don't have to hate you or disagree, and nobody does. And I do start and can start and will start with my own thoughts and feelings. Now, here's your challenge. What if you remembered the other person's worth? Whether even if they're on a news story on TV, but especially in your family or in conversations. What if you not only reclaimed your own divine identity, but what if you helped someone else reclaim theirs? Not by changing what they think to agree with you, but just by acknowledging and reminding them of their own divine identity. What if you not only opened your own possibility, but you helped someone else open theirs? What if you not only accept your own ownership of everything you say, think, and do? What if you helped someone else claim that ownership? And embodying sovereignty doesn't mean arrogance. It means remembering that no one is coming and that you build the life you want. One choice, one thought at a time. If you want to live in a healed world, be one. Be healed. Go do whatever work it takes so that you are and stay healed. No matter what the situation, act. I don't mean put on an act, but I mean let the being of your healing be so evident that it just leaks out of your eyes and ears. You are not helpless. I know you're one person, so am I. I'm the architect of light. I'm a purveyor of love. So are you if you want to do that, if you want to be that. You can be this moment. A beacon of light, an architect of healing. It doesn't matter if someone else wants to hear you or not. The force of your being penetrates into the world, a little at first, and a lot later. So remember, you're not helpless. You're a beacon of light, a vessel of love, and a conduit of power, if you choose. The next chapter of humanity is being written 1 minute at a time, one choice at a time, right now. And I invite you to join me in writing that with a pen of love, of tolerance, of discussion, of listening, and of allowing, and at the same time, adding good to the world just because you can. I know, because I do that, that that is the path to joy and happiness and the path to create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.